As counselor coming up to get positioned, I would like to thank counsel for making the arrangements to come half an hour early today. We had a case go off that was set for now, and we appreciate counsel's willingness to come today and to present their arguments a little bit early. Because you were not all here during my earlier comments, I'll make them again. Have both counsel had an opportunity to look at our sheet concerning our instructions for oral argument?
Yes, sir.
Does either side have any questions about those? I assume that are both of you going to be arguing today? All right. I appreciate that, but please understand it's up to you to keep within the confines of your 15 minutes. And however you allocate your time is your business, but when the red light comes on, it's done, okay? All right. That being said, if anyone has come into the courtroom since I made this last request, I'll make it again. If you have a cell phone or a pager that may go off during the argument, please put it on silent or turn it off so we don't interrupt the parties of the court. Thank you. With that, we may begin.
Yeah, please the court. I am Norman Wright, registration number 30625. And I represent the appellant, HealthSouth Corporation. I would like to reserve 5 minutes of my argument for rebuttal. HealthSouth is a publicly traded for-profit health services company that operates outpatient facilities, providing diagnostic services, outpatient surgery, and various kinds of physical therapy services throughout the United States and including in Colorado. The company is a Delaware corporation but is headquartered in Alabama and had a number of facilities in Colorado in the 1980s and up through the early part of this decade. This case involves a summary disposition of an appeal to the Board of Assessment Appeals from a denial of an abatement request for tax year 2002 regarding personal property taxes that had been paid concerning personal property located in two patient facilities in cities within Boulder County, Colorado. There are two primary issues that are before the court. First, does a county have the jurisdiction or statutory authority to levy a property tax upon property that is not physically located and in use within the county on January 1 of any particular tax year? Secondly, does a taxpayer who reported erroneously personal property information to the assessor, no matter what the reason for that misreporting, have the right to subsequently revise the reported information and seek an abatement and refund of the taxes on the misreported property that was reported to the assessor earlier? And pursuant to statute 3910.114, the taxpayer asserts that it does have that right. There is a sub-issue, of course, and that is whether or not the Board of Assessment Appeals properly concluded that it does not have jurisdiction to hear the appeal that the taxpayer lodged. We would assert that the BAA, in fact, did have jurisdiction, that jurisdiction vested once a timely appeal was filed, and there is no dispute that the appeal was filed within the 30 days provided by law, and the filing fee was paid. Thereafter, the BAA had vested jurisdiction and should have afforded the taxpayer an evidentiary hearing on the ultimate issues that the taxpayer sought to bring to the Board of Assessment Appeals. HealthSouth, as I indicated, had operated clinics in Longmont and Boulder for a number of years. Their annual personal property tax declaration schedules, which were required under Colorado law of all business taxpayers, were prepared and filed by KPMG, a national accounting firm. Beginning in 1999, the KPMG employee who prepared and filed those returns noticed a new kind of entry in the asset ledger. Typically in the asset ledger, you would have seen things under business equipment, medical equipment, computers, office equipment. Suddenly in 1999, there appeared a new classification, something called AP summary, and those letters were all in capital letters. The woman inquired of the Health South Tax Department, what sort of assets are AP summary? Because under Colorado law, there are various kinds of classifications of property, and you have to properly account for the property within those classifications so that the assessor knows what sort of economic life and depreciation schedules to apply to the property. Richard Botts, the vice president and head of the tax department, informed this agent that all of this was miscellaneous business equipment and should be accounted for in that fashion.
Pardon me for interrupting, counsel.
Yes.
But I don't want to use freighted language here, but that was clearly a misrepresentation, right? Because this stuff didn't exist.
Clearly a misrepresentation by the vice president of tax. That is correct, Your
Honor. All right. So at this point, this is extended on to the county, and the county says, okay, here's what your tax rate is. Health South pays at that higher rate. Because if they hadn't claimed this property, it would have been a lower rate, right?
Well, not a lower rate, lower tax.
Lower tax,
but yes.
Right, I'm sorry. So at this point, what was the county, and I understand that you want the money back, and I get that, but at this point in the process, what was the county supposed to do when this misrepresentation is given to them? Did they do anything wrong?
No, and no one is asserting that the county did anything wrong. The county is entitled to rely on the information. They're entitled to use that information to calculate the property taxes and send out the tax invoices, and the company is then obligated to pay the treasurer. But that's at that point in time. What we assert is that subsequent to that, new information comes forward. We find out, in fact, as the court has alluded, there was an express misrepresentation. These AP entries were entirely fictitious. There was a group of rogue officers within Health South that were perpetrating a scheme under which they would inflate the sales that were existing for the company, the gross revenue. They don't have the cash to reflect that gross revenue, so what do? Well, then you claim that you bought assets, you reflect those assets on the asset ledgers, and that explains where the cash went to, but the benefit was showing that you're constantly increasing the revenue. In 2003,
does the record tell us what the purpose of showing that they were increasing revenue was?
No, unfortunately, because there is no real substantive record made below, because this was a summary disposition on the jurisdictional issue. It's probably not a stretch of imagination to assume that the purpose is, if you keep increasing revenue, your company is appearing to be in a growth stage, and I think that's what the motive was. No, that's certainly not in the record, Your Honor. In 2003, then, once this scheme became known to responsible individuals within the company, all of those officers were discharged, including Mr. Botts. In fact, Mr. Botts went to prison over his engaged activities. Health South then engaged independent consultants who determined that, in fact, there were no assets representing this fictitious AP summary, and they filed requests for abatement refund throughout Colorado. In Boulder, those refunds were denied at the county board level, and as I indicated earlier, we timely filed the appeal in order to take this issue to the Board of Assessment Appeals. Prior to actually holding the evidentiary hearing, in between the time notice of hearing had been scheduled, the county filed a motion to dismiss, asserting that fraud isn't a listed basis within 3910.114. And of course, we'd assert that fraud, or we'd concede that the word fraud doesn't appear. We don't think that's dispositive of the issue. The Board of Assessment Appeals then converted the evidentiary hearing to an oral argument hearing. It did accept affidavits, and those affidavits form at least the broad brush facts that I've alluded to, other than the purpose of the scheme that the court inquired about. 3910.114 says if taxes have been levied erroneously or illegally, then the taxpayer is entitled within 2 years to seek a refund, and that's what the taxpayer attempted to do. If we look at where property taxes, the power to have property taxes comes from, it starts with the Constitution, Article 10, Section 3, and then the legislature has adopted Section 39.1.105, which clearly provides that property has to be located within the county on January 1 of each tax year. Property taxes flow annually. The county was entitled to rely on the original reportings, but once the new information comes forward, the county then has the obligation to examine that new information, and if the information turns out to be correct, that information was improperly and erroneously given to the county back in April of the the tax year, which is when the declaration schedules were filed, then it's incumbent upon the assessor to correct the record and levy the proper amount of taxes and refund those improperly collected taxes to the taxpayer.
Pardon me for interrupting, Counsel.
No problem.
I'm sorry. Let's assume this was not a corporation but an individual who did the same thing for purposes known only to the individual. The individual misrepresents, makes stuff up, pays a higher tax, and then comes back later. Are you saying that the same analysis would apply to that individual when that individual comes back and says, oops, my bad, I lied to you guys. I had reasons for that back then that I thought would benefit me, but now I see that I'm not being benefited. Can I have my money back, please? Would that apply there?
Well, of course, that isn't the fact here, but yes, I can see that. I think that's also the law, that is, if for any reason the property was misreported, and in fact the property is not located in the county in the assessment day, while it may seem inequitable, and it may certainly give one reason to go, that doesn't seem fair, that's the legislature's prerogative to design the way the tax statutes work. And when we talk about unfairness, what has happened here, when you overreport property, property tax, other than the minor, well, maybe not so minor, other than the fact that it can affect the school finance calculations, but the way property tax works is the assessor determines the total amount of property, the board of the various taxing jurisdictions decide how much money they need to spend, you do the math, and that's the way you come up with the levy rate. By over-reporting, HealthSouth overpaid property taxes, which served to under-report to the remaining taxpayers, so the remaining taxpayers receive a windfall. The way the property tax abatement process works is now within the levy for this year in which the refund should have been granted, you just recalculate the math and the refund levy becomes part of the process for the tax year in which the refunds are made. So everybody comes out in the position they should have been in had this all been done properly. It's unfair to assert that a fraud was perpetrated upon the county or its taxpayers. It wasn't. The fraud was perpetrated by the rogue officers on the company. And now, in effect, the county assessor and the Division of Property Taxation are abating and aiding that fraud by denying the company its rightful refund to the taxes that were overpaid. We would just ask that the court reverse this matter and send it back to the Board of Assessment Appeals for an evidentiary hearing on whether or not their taxes were overassessed in the year 2002.
Thank you, Counsel. You have about 4 minutes and 10 seconds left. Thank you.
May it please this honorable court. My name is Lisa Brenner Freeman, registration number 31175. I represent the Board of Assessment Appeals. I'd like to make one primary point to this court and then, as we discussed, hand the argument over to Boulder County's counsel, Mr. Kurgy. The point I'd like to raise relates to the board's ability to dismiss a case on jurisdictional grounds without the necessity of providing every taxpayer with an evidentiary hearing before it can decide the case. CRS section 3910.114 sets forth the only grounds upon which a taxpayer may seek an abatement and refund of taxes. There must be either an erroneous valuation for assessment, irregularity in levying, clerical error, or overvaluation. So regardless of what the Constitution allots a taxpayer, in addition to that, there's some procedural hurdles that a taxpayer must hit in order for them to be entitled to relief, and those are set forth in 3910.114. So unless one of those grounds exists, the board has no authority to grant relief to a taxpayer seeking an abatement or a refund. In this case, the board held a hearing to determine if one of the statutory bases exists necessary to bring an abatement or refund claim. The board held it did not and dismissed the matter for lack of subject matter jurisdiction. There's nothing unlawful about the board employing this procedure to handle a subject matter jurisdictional issue. Board Rule 21 specifically allows them to do this. HealthSouth, however, in the briefing claims that the board must provide a full-blown evidentiary hearing to every single taxpayer that timely files an appeal. So as long as it's timely filed, HealthSouth's position is that the board must give them a full-blown evidentiary hearing on the entire matter. HealthSouth's briefs don't cite, and the board is unaware of any statute or any case law that specifically requires the board to give a full-blown evidentiary hearing to every taxpayer who timely files an appeal. This is contrary to Board Rule 21, and it leads to an absurd result if this is the proper interpretation, because it would contravene a policy for quasi-judicial efficiency, and it would simply waste precious funding for the board to give an evidentiary hearing to every taxpayer. There are multiple situations where this policy would lead to an absurd result, besides the specific facts before this court. For example, if a taxpayer files a protest for a particular property for a particular tax year, and then files an abatement or a refund appeal for the same property for the same tax year, by statute, this is barred. The taxpayer is prevented from seeking an abatement or refund claim in this circumstance. So the board has and could in the future simply dismiss this on a petition like that in a Rule 21 motion before having to give a full evidentiary hearing on the substantive dispute, when the board wouldn't have subject matter jurisdiction. Another situation is a best information available assessment, and this concept was talked about in case law in HealthSouth's briefing. A taxpayer may only file a protest for a best information assessment. That's where a taxpayer doesn't file property tax schedules, and the assessor comes up with a value based on the best information available. The case of Geophysical Services 860 P period 2D 514 specifically states that you can't bring an abatement or refund procedure, a claim, for that type of an assessment. So there's far greater a ruling from this court that would require an evidentiary hearing in every single case.
Ms. Freeman, this isn't the typical case. Here are at least two grounds meet the statute: erroneous reporting and overvaluation.
I agree, Your Honor, but there was an evidentiary hearing where specific argument was raised and factual discussion necessary for the board to rule that it didn't have jurisdiction under 3910.114.
But if there are grounds under the statute, it has to give an evidentiary hearing, does it not?
I disagree. I think that there was enough. Their evidence they were able to submit evidence. There were affidavits submitted. It's kind of like a court having the ability, although this wasn't a summary judgment motion, but a court can make a decision on a summary judgment motion without the necessity of a full-blown trial. It's a similar analogy.
If the taxpayer alleges grounds that come within the statute, are you saying that the board has discretion, even though the grounds are stated, not to give an evidentiary hearing?
Regardless of, given everything that the taxpayer provided to the board, and in consideration with what the county said, there were the HealthSouth didn't allege any facts that would have allowed relief to be afforded.
That's because the board found here that it didn't allege any grounds under the statute.
Even given their factual assertions as true, I'd like to toss this question, if you don't mind, to my co-party, if that would be okay.
May it please the court, Michael A. Kirchy, Assistant Boulder County Attorney, number 21921.
Mr. Kirchy, I hate to hit you with a question before you get warmed up, but would you please address HealthSouth's argument that the city of Boulder has a windfall here?
His argument is that because they overpay their taxes, that somehow the entities benefit from that, and that because there's a thing called an abatement levy, that they'll recover any refund that has to be made. While it's true that there is something called an abatement levy, and taxing entities probably will ultimately recover refunds, they are harmed, and they're harmed because if HealthSouth prevails at this point, then the treasurer of Boulder County has to refund the money to them, and then they have to collect that money back from the taxing entities like the city of Boulder, school district, and other entities that make tax mills. And that those entities are without that money then for the balance of the year.
Mr. Kirchy, they weren't entitled to it to begin with. How can you be harmed by giving back something you're not entitled to?
Well, they weren't. I disagree that they weren't entitled to it.
Well, they were not entitled to it if the property doesn't exist in the county. And they erroneously, for whatever reason, assessed a tax on non-existent property. Would you agree with that?
I would agree if there is an erroneous assessment, but I do not agree that there was an erroneous assessment. You have to look at the whole statutory framework for assessing personal property. And under that framework, the taxpayer self-reports the property that they have, which is then valued by the assessor. Notice of value is sent. If there's no protest, that gets added to the county's tax value, and then they're billed, and then they pay on that.
But the question is whether or not, if the taxpayer makes a mistake, for whatever reason, it's entitled to go back and have a new valuation placed on its real property. I don't mean real estate. I mean the personal property that's real, not fictitious.
Yes. If the taxpayer makes a clerical error, then that falls within the abatement and refund statute, allowing them to pursue a refund.
Doesn't the statute also say overvaluation?
It does say overvaluation.
Isn't this a perfect example of overvaluation?
No, I disagree.
And why? Because
the county exactly followed the statutory mandates for valuing personal property.
That's because part of the valuation is based not only upon what the county does, but on what the taxpayer does.
That's correct.
So if the taxpayer makes an overvaluation, that falls squarely within the terms of the statute, just as much as if the county made an overvaluation.
Well, I believe that the term of overvaluation applies to what the county does.
Although it doesn't say that.
It does not. But I think if you look at the production geophysical case, which the Assistant Attorney General already referenced, in that case, the court said that when a taxpayer utterly fails to complete a personal property schedule and then tries to obtain a refund based on overvaluation in the abatement statute, that's not allowed. That's not an overvaluation because of the taxpayer's negligence. And if a taxpayer cannot pursue an overvaluation based on their own negligence, then I would submit that they surely cannot pursue an overvaluation based on their own intentional fraudulent misconduct.
Well, can they, and let's get back to that word in just a moment, but could they then make an application based upon an erroneous valuation?
Under these facts, I'm sorry.
I'm talking about statutory grounds to ask for an abatement. One of those is an erroneous valuation.
That's correct. In the Boulder Country Club case, the Court of Appeals defined what that term meant, okay, and talked about that being a legal error.
Now you use the word fraud. What was the detrimental reliance here by the county?
The county relied upon the fraudulent, they relied upon the fraud that the Health South conducted relied upon those personal property schedules to value and tax the property.
Don't you have to have detrimental reliance and damages before you have fraud?
That may be if you're asserting a claim for fraud against...
That's certainly what Morrison against Goodspeed says, correct?
Correct.
And that case hasn't been overruled, has it?
Not to my knowledge. I'm not familiar with the case.
Isn't the party who got defrauded here the taxpayer?
Well, there are probably a number of parties that have been in the case we're talking about.
But certainly one of the parties who wasn't defrauded is the county.
Well, I would submit the county was a victim because they had to rely upon the personal property schedules which flowed from the fraudulent.
What, the county's got no damages.
Well, the county will have to refund the tax amounts.
It'll have to refund money that it's not entitled to.
Again, I realize I'm somewhat arguing circularly with you, but I believe they were entitled to it because they followed the statutory scheme.
You can go ahead. I'm sorry to bother you.
No, not at all. Because I'm running out of time, I'll summarize. I don't think you can get a abatement or refund in Colorado just for any reason. And the assertion by HealthSouth that they're entitled to a refund based on the misconduct of their own executives, their own CEO, the vice president of tax, does not qualify under one of the statutory reasons. There's certainly no mistake here. The HealthSouth conduct was intentional in creating the fictitious property. The county made no mistake in valuing the property. The county exactly followed the statutory scheme.
Could you articulate the difference between erroneous valuation and overvaluation?
Well, in the Boulder Country Club case, the court said that erroneous valuation for assessment is a legal issue, statutory. In that case, it was whether or not the values for 2 years have to comply with the statute that says they have to be the same. And then it said overvaluation is a factual issue, I believe, based on how the assessor values the property.
Just because it's a, if it's a factual issue, though, that doesn't exclude a factual mistake made by the taxpayer.
I would submit that overvaluation applies to the assessor's processes. And if you look at the, I believe the production geophysical case probably addresses this better than I will, but I think it's applicable here. And I would just like to briefly address my other line of argument, which is that even if you find that one of the grounds or that one of the four bases is satisfied by HealthSouth, that the doctrine of clean hands or unclean hands should prevent HealthSouth from prevailing here. The U.S. Supreme Court did say that although tax refund requests are statutorily based, they're equitable in nature. And equitable defenses can be raised in these types of cases. Clean hands is such an equitable defense, and I believe it would apply here because HealthSouth's entire claim is based on their own misconduct, and they should not profit from that. What they derive some sort of benefit from the original fraud. They got caught, now they want their money back. They would benefit again.
What benefit did they derive?
I believe they derive from increased stock prices.
And is that in the record?
I thought it was. I've been trying to search that when you asked the question initially. I think if you looked at some of the cases that are cited, the Alabama case and some of the others, that may support that.
There was a hearing here, was there?
Well, there was a hearing, not a valuation hearing.
So you would want us to take judicial notice of facts adduced and evidence in other cases?
I believe that the factual situation in this case and the Alabama case are exactly the same. Thank you.
Are you all right, counsel?
Oh, yes. To the extent that in my brief it appears that I'm asking for a broad rule that you're entitled to an evidentiary hearing in every case before the Board of Assessment Appeals, that's certainly not what we're asking. But what we are asking is if the taxpayer comes forward with enough evidence to support that there may have been an erroneous or an overvaluation, then the Board of Assessment Appeals should allow that taxpayer the opportunity to present that case and to decide that it didn't have jurisdiction was clearly erroneous. Jurisdiction attached at the time that the petition was filed. We assert that we did present more than a little evidence that we had a right to seek a refund because there was either erroneous assessment by the assessor. And that's one of the other points that we'd like the court to focus on. They keep wanting to shift this error to the taxpayer. It's incumbent upon the tax official to carry out the tax code, and certainly the tax official as a defense at the time we erroneously filed information and misreported it, that what they did was correct. We're not saying that what they did back in the day was not correct. But what we are saying is that the abatement process is there to correct mistakes and errors of virtually every kind. Colorado has a very broad refund statute and abatement statute. Whether things were erroneous, illegal, clerical errors, virtually every reason can be the basis for an abatement. The Boulder Country Club case really is of no support, I think, to them in this case. The Boulder Country Club, first of all, was a real property case involving a situation which in year one of the two-year assessment process, they had filed a protest and went through the protest process defectively. They failed to perfect the next level of appeal, so they were out. Then in the second year, they prevailed on the overvaluation and came back and sought abatement. And originally they were denied, but then the court reversed its finding because there was a legal basis, but that doesn't mean that only a legal basis is the only reason for abatement. Here there was no protest at the first level. What the abatement and protest provisions are supposed to provide is that you only get one bite at the apple on proving actual value. That's what we seek here, our one bite at the apple, to demonstrate that we were assessed on fictitious assets, so there was no basis for the valuation that was determined by the assessor back in the day. Best information available cases are also not applicable here. We did file information with the assessor. The reason that there's a limited remedy in best information available cases is the taxpayer is playing roulette, hoping that the assessor doesn't find out about them because they haven't made themselves known in any way, shape, or form to the assessor. Under those circumstances, the Court of Appeals and Geophysical said, once you get notice from the assessor that the assessor has levied a best information available, you have to live with that assessment. Subsequent case involving Denver said that it works both ways. The assessor can't do an audit later. The assessor had their opportunity to audit back in the day. You didn't do it. You have to live with the best information available assessment. Those cases don't apply here. Likewise, equitable defenses don't apply here, but if they did apply, they certainly don't apply when you kick the case out for lack of jurisdiction. With equitable defenses inherently are based upon facts which we were prevented from adducing because of a lack of hearing. No question, this case certainly makes one feel uncomfortable that there was a fraud perpetrated in upon the company and upon the investing public. That's probably true. But that fraud didn't work any damage on the county, and the company was harmed by that fraud. The company merely seeks its legal right to use the abatement process and demonstrate that it was overtaxed on the property actually in place in the county on the assessment date. We would ask that this matter be reversed and remanded to the Board of Assessment Appeals with instruction to take evidence on whether or not the property was overvalued on the tax in the tax year in which we were involved. Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel, thank you very much for your arguments. The case will stand submitted, and an opinion will issue in due course. We again thank counsel for coming in early, and we hope